today we're going to talk about aero test cell requirements, and it wouldn't be a suiting podcast if we didn't have the right person in the room with us, which is Matt Janisse from Froude. Welcome, Matt.
Hello, welcome.
Matt is our sales manager that focuses his time and attention mainly on aerospace. So the one thing I wanted to set the stage with is that we're going to be talking about rotating aerospace test equipment or dynamometers versus thrust. So obviously with jet engines, you see a lot of the, most of the commercial airliners are thrust type jet engines. And we're going to be talking about a little bit smaller than that, but still decent size, which is rotating. So obviously you need something that rotates to test it with our equipment. So Matt, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself? I've known you since you've been here because you've been here for, what is it going on now?
About five years. Yeah, five and counting.
Why don't you tell the podcast audience a little bit about yourself?
Sure, happy to. Matt Janisse, Global Technical Sales Manager here at a wonderful company, Froude Dynamometers. Been working with Froude since about 2018, and prior to coming to Froude, I didn't know what a dynamometer was, let alone the ability to pronounce it. So for 20 years of sales, project management, my previous life, I was involved in other rotating components such as bearings at a local distributor that I worked for a few years. And I got a lot of good experience and was able to take that knowledge and that experience and really overlay it here with Froude to be able to develop my knowledge in the dynamometer industry. So very happy to be here. Currently, my area of expertise would be aerospace. And what that is we deal with a lot of OEMs, MROs that work in the turboprop, turboshaft development and testing arenas. So we'll help our customers if they have a certain type of engine, we'll help them size the correct solution, the correct dyno, work with them to establish a perfect test system that will be able to fit within their test cell. And at the end of the day, our job is to make sure our customers continue testing.
Good introduction. Let's dive into the podcast. So the one thing I wanted to talk about first is just a relationship between automotive testing and aerospace testing. And again, this is combustion engines we're talking about. So there are some similarities, but there are also some differences that Matt will relate to as part of our conversation. But in the automotive world, there's durability testing, development testing. Same thing exists for aerospace. The conditions are different, though. We'll get farther into it, but in regards to the testing between the two, you still have to develop new products. You still have things to consider from a safety perspective. It's just obviously the environment's different, right? We're at a certain feet above sea level or whatever when it comes to testing for automotive, but from an aerospace, we're talking 20,000, 30,000 feet up in the air. So the conditions are much different and you have to simulate those conditions. So it becomes quite interesting and I think it's a neat area. Let's dive right into, touched on it earlier, Matt, but what are some of the aerospace or who are some of the aerospace dynamometer users?
Absolutely. So primarily, obviously, the OEMs, so the original equipment manufacturers, would be kind of the beginning of the path for customers since they actually develop and invent, create, and manufacture the engines that we test. So primarily, a lot of development, durability, R&D testing will be housed within OEMs. So we work very closely with them, again, to provide our best solutions for their needs. And then that subsequently kind of trickles down to MROs, maintenance, overhaul and repair facilities.
Okay, that was my question.
And
okay,
there's several of those that we work with. Some will be just civilian MROs, some will be just military MROs, and some will be hybrid. Now, these types of organizations are around the world. We also work with governments around the world. For example, a certain country will have a national research center where they do their own in-house research. They're working on prototype inventions, new engines, testing different fuels, different capacitors, and you know, just trying to innovate the industry. So again, we work very closely with them in understanding what their true application is, trying to understand their need behind the need is really what it comes down to. So at the end of the day, we give them the exact system that they need that they're going to be able to utilize, repeat, and have quality testing, you know, for several years. One of the other major customers that we deal with is also the military. And as you can imagine, they very heavily use a lot of airframes, turboprop, turboshafts, helicopters, airplanes. And they also have, again, their reach around the world. So there's several different test stands that we'll work with. whether it's U.S. government, NATO allies, basically any military in the world that isn't sanctioned at the time. Mm. And we will supply them with the devices and testing apparatuses that they need to support their efforts.
So that must have some unique requirements when it comes to the military applications.
Oh, yes. Yeah, definitely. And highly top secret, Mike. So I'm not sure if I can mention it.
So tests. What are some of the unique tests or requirements that generally you'll find in the aerospace testing market or industry?
Sure. Yeah, there are some different tests. So when it comes to turboprop, which is primarily for the airplane, there is one way of testing those, and it's kind of the older style. There are still a few cells around that utilize this, which is load prop. So they're basically testing the engine with a propeller, and then they're just measuring with their control system and their data axis system the speed and torque that they're reading from the engine. Again, this is kind of an older style of testing. It serves its purpose, but there's new technology and new ways with a dynamometer that gives a lot more feedback, a lot more information than a prop test would. Mm-hmm. So that's a one form. Other forms from an aerospace standpoint of testing would be altitude testing. Obviously, these aircrafts leave the ground. They go up several thousand feet, depending on their variant or their variety, mm-hmm. how high they could go. So a lot of these test cells will be pressurized to be able to mimic those altitudes and pressures that an airframe would experience at such heights. Now, when that happens, that brings a lot of other issues or a lot of other challenges, because not all equipment and devices are actually developed to withstand such altitude pressures.
Right.
The other thing, obviously, to consider is not just the altitude, but there's also the environmental impacts, right? So it's very, very cold up at 10,000 feet, and the higher you go, the colder it gets. So other factors such as temperature have to be accounted for. And so when we work with our customers, there's times where, you know, our equipment's going to experience extremely low temperatures or cold soaks, as they call it, where the equipment is sitting in a very cold environment for several hours, and then they want to test its ability to start up. And so we'll have to prepare our equipment accordingly for those types of situations. And that's where here at Froude, we've got an exceptional engineering team, a lot of great people here with great minds who are able to find the resolution and the solution to just about anything we put our minds to.
And we've been doing this for a while, right?
And we have.
Over the years.
We are a 140-year-old company.
Yeah, I do recall that. Mm-hmm. So we talk about aerospace and people think airplanes, but we're also talking about helicopter.
That's right.
Right? Because they're powered with the same engines, but smaller.
Turboshaft.
Yeah. Yep. So what happens is you need to be able to test at different angles. And whether, you know, and you can imagine a helicopter as it tilts forward, tilts back, rotates one way, rotates the other way.
Pitch and roll.
Yep. You've got to be able to simulate that within the testing environment. And that's where I've been on, fortunate to be on some customer sites where I got to see that, which is quite unique. And that is part of almost standard testing that you go through if you're developing a new product or a new engine. You need to go through and have that capability of doing that. So that's what we call attitude testing. Quite unique, just like altitude, as you explained it, Matt. You get into some unique situations where when you're at high altitude, that means there's different pressures, there are different temperatures, and those could become quite extreme depending upon the altitude you're at. If you compare it to automotive, you'll have similar circumstances where you'll test at different temperatures. Mm-hmm. You'll have testing at different altitudes, but different extremes from one industry to the next, right?
That's true, Mike. And regarding the attitude too, there is a bigger difference and a little bit more engineering put into an attitude test stand. Some of our standard test stands, they are fixed. So solid extruded metal that are fixed to the floor to give the entire test stand rigidity. Some of those test stands can also be on trolleys, on mm-hmm. caster wheels, in case yep. We have customers that have situations where they only have one test cell, but they need to test several different engines. Yep. So we give them the ability to be able to wheel in and wheel out a test stand. And with the attitude test stand, now that's something that's almost custom, depending on the customer's requirements. And there would be a lot of engineering and a lot of cost that goes into that, because now you are moving from a fixed test stand to a test stand that has to be able to pitch, roll, and rotate at will or on sequence.
And you bring up a good point in regards to the test cell and the use of it and what goes into it. And if you think of the pitch and roll and the angle, you can see the similar things in the automobile industry, such as a race car instrumented going around a track and taking all the G-forces of it and inputting it into the test cell and simulating those same G-forces. So I've been privy to working on a stand that actually did the different angular motions dynamically, but again, not related to the aerospace industry to the extremes. So, types of aero test beds in regards to speed power range. What are we talking about, Matt? I mean, I know the automobile industry, you know, you can think of terms of 6,000 to 10,000 RPM average across the RPM range of a internal combustion engine. What does the aerospace engines look like as far as performance-wise? What are we talking about from a dyno perspective?
Well, close to the range that you just had there from about 6,000 RPM to about 10,000, maybe 12,000 RPM, we call our F-series, which is sort of loosely called our medium-speed dynamometers. And there is a slew of turboshaft and turboprop engines that do fall into that category in that speed and power range.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that could be anywhere from testing an engine from 2,000 RPM, you know, 3,000 horsepower kind of thing, up to 10,000 RPM and 6,000 horsepower.
Okay.
So those test stands primarily, again, we are fixed test stands in that type of testing.
Right.
And we have several different kinds that we put together for different engine variants, whether it's a PT6A or a T56, you know, so on and so forth. Now, when we move on to a little bit higher speeds, which we move to our HS series of dynamometers, and that's where we start to get some pretty extreme speeds, anywhere from 17,500 RPM up to a maximum of about 32,500.
That's fast.
That's really fast. And those also come with, you know, some high horsepower, 4,000 shaft horsepower. And again, our OEM customers, our military customers, and our MRO customers will be using a variety of both these types of speed and power ranges.
Okay.
So we have some standard test equipment. Obviously, we've been in this game for a long time. We've got a lot of great designs. We work with a lot of excellent companies. So we do have some standard product test stands that we showcase and that we develop. But again, there's always those certain customers that have special needs, or they have a special requirement or a special situation within their test cell where we need to customize something for them, or we need to be able to adapt something so that they can properly test the engines that they need to.
What are some of the typical questions that you're approached with by the customers when they're thinking about an aerospace test bed? What kind of questions do you have to field?
Well, several. To be honest with you, there's probably way too many to be able to say just here in this short time of our podcast. But some of the most common ones, obviously, customers come to us. They come looking for our expertise, right? They have a situation where they do not have a device on site, or they've been tasked by their management to put together some data, some information and background if they're looking to develop a new site or if they're looking to start testing a new engine. So the typical questions we'll get is, do you have a dynamometer that will do this? And one of the main questions we always get is, do you have this magic dynamometer that will do everything?
Right.
And unfortunately, that we don't. You know, everything has its place. Everything has its range. And again, that's when communicating and diving a little bit deeper with the customer and kind of asking some questions back, kind of going back to what I said earlier, you really have to find the need behind the need, because sometimes our customers don't really know exactly what they need yet until we walk through what they're trying to accomplish. And then we start to find out the areas where we can really support them and share our expertise.
Well put. It's the old statement of, they don't know what they don't know.
That's right.
So they have an objective. Like you said, they may have been handed something. They may be a young engineer with not all the experience of working in the industry or the specific new engine development program, but they know they've got to find a way to test.
That's right.
And achieve this test. They just don't know how to put it together.
Correct. And that's what we're here for.
Yep. And what the right piece of equipment is to use, or pieces of equipment.
Mm-hmm.
So unique applications that you've been involved with. Can you think of anything over the past years that was not the run of the mill?
You know what, Mike? Nothing comes to
leading,
mind.
I'm leading the witness.
You are leading the witness. Yeah, absolutely. Actually, one of the most unique applications that I've encountered is with a very specific OEM who was on contract by our U.S. military to develop a new turboshaft engine to support the military heavy lift helicopter.
Mm.
program. And this is a very unique application because it is a larger engine. It's very powerful. This airframe is designed for troop transport as well as like Humvee vehicle transport. So we're talking about a very powerful piece of equipment. And the OEM's task was to develop a more powerful engine. And in doing so, you know, going back to the altitude topic that we discussed, this particular test stand had some very serious requirements within the statement of work where we had to create a whole new test stand and a whole new testing system based on our HS590-2 dynamometer, based on a inertial flywheel, and with a newer application of a backdrive motor to simulate certain parameters and functions that the OEM required, these testing parameters that they had to hit in order to meet, you know, their contractual obligations with their customer. So that was super interesting. But then there's another layer of that, because you take that application and that new system on the back, and then you have to throw all that into an altitude chamber an altitude chamber that obviously is going to be very cold in the environment and have a higher altitude than 10,000 altitude feet.
Yeah, and one of the other key things with that one is that there's a certain envelope in which this has to fit. You don't have all the footprint that you would like to have. You're usually constrained because you're in a big metal tube, and you've got to fit it in this big metal tube with other pieces of equipment that already exist there. So that provides another set of challenges, not just from a performance perspective, but just from a fitting perspective inside of it.
That's right. So when you think of just our test stand and equipment, and then you have to think of an enclosed device to protect our equipment and then fit all that into that tube, it makes it for a very challenging but yet exciting opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It pushes our engineers, that's for certain. So, Matt, one thing that I wanted to touch on is in regards to testing. Can you tell us a little bit about APUs?
Absolutely. So auxiliary power units. Mm-hmm. Yeah, these are actually very crucial in airframes and in engine testing. And the reason why is because they are usually the backup power or the onboard system power for these aircrafts. Mm-hmm. Now, there's a huge safety factor when it comes to these as well, because if there's ever a power loss or some kind of a failure on board of an airframe, you know, these kick in and are supposed to give the right amount of power for the for a duration of time to be able to help get these people out of whatever situation they're in.
Gotcha.
So from an APU testing, it's not the same as testing, exactly the same as testing, say, an engine in a dynamic form. APUs are usually tested more for duration and durability. But they do come with higher speeds. You know, we've seen some APUs that are up to 13,500 RPM.
Okay.
Power from, you know, 200, 150 horsepower up to about 350 horsepower and sometimes bigger. But again, these are critical to the industry and to overall engine testing themselves. And they kind of go hand in hand when you're testing at an MRO. If you're going to be tearing apart an airplane and then you're going to be going through the engine and testing that, they're always checking the APUs right next to them, usually in a cell just down the hall from them. So,
and are APUs used on all aircraft?
Well, not every single one, but a majority of them, and helicopters, it is. I don't believe there's an APU on like a
Cessna.
Exactly. I was just going to say a little Cessna biplane. But when you do get into the helicopters, there absolutely is. And when you get into some of the larger airframe airplanes, you know, like the C-130 and things like that, like absolutely they have. And actually, some of them also have double APUs and multiple APUs.
Interesting.
Again, like I said, some are backup systems. Some actually run the electronics as well.
Gotcha.
During flight. So another critical part in the testing world.
So the best part of this is getting your feedback and input into the future. Where do you see trends going in regards to the aerospace testing world, in regards to obviously Froude produces dynamometers? Where do you see the trends? Where do you see the future?
Well, give me a sec here. Let me just reference my crystal ball.
Which you frequently do.
Which I do, yeah. The trends, honestly, the trends that I see that are happening in the aerospace industry right now is we are at a very unique junction. And what I mean by that is that obviously the airplanes and the aerospace industry has been around for several years, but we're starting to enter into an area where a lot of the airframes, military, civilian, are starting to age. They've been in operation for many, many decades, utilizing the same engines and the same airframes. And, you know, the industry's realized that it's not sustainable. They have to innovate. They have to have new engines. They have to have new airframes. So we're coming to a point now where a lot of these organizations, whether it be government, military, civilian, that are looking to completely replace and revamp their fleets. Gotcha. So with that comes a lot more in testing from an R&D standpoint. The innovation that we talk about comes a lot more MROs who are expanding, they're growing, they're building new test cells. There's more demand now as well. And there's also an offshoot of that because, you know, as everyone I think know in the U.S., a lot of our equipment and military equipment, when it gets a little older, we sell it to other countries. Mm-hmm. So then that opens up other opportunity and other testing that some countries didn't have before. So that opens up more of an industry for ourselves as Fruit, as a global supplier and provider of dynamometers and test equipments. So, yeah, and I see, you know, this is just going to continue to grow and we'll continue to innovate.
That's interesting. Definitely thought-provoking to say the least. Well, Matt, it's been a pleasure. Much appreciate your time today. I know your time is limited, so we appreciate you joining us on the podcast, and hopefully in the future we can get you on another one.
Always a good time.
All right. Thanks, Matt.
Thank you for listening to Dyno Insights, presented by Froude. If there are any engine testing topics you would like us to discuss, we'd love to hear from you. Please email us at podcast@froudedyno.com.